Tim Carney is a resident fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, which does great work, AEI. He works on economic competition, cronyism, civil society, localism, and religion in America. He is also the commentary editor at the Washington Examiner. So he is a busy fellow. We're talking to him about a recent article in the Washington Examiner entitled "Election Experts Say Trump is 99.5% Likely to Lose. Here's the Simple Reason They Are Wrong." Mr. Carney says that Donald Trump is going to win. Why?
I don't say Donald Trump is going to win. I say it's not a done deal. And there's a lot of reasons why. The first thing is that Trump needs to pull off an upset, or we could say outperform the polls, in about 6 or 7 states. Now, if I told you, if you had a 25% chance of hitting a three-point shot, and I said you have to hit 6 in a row, yeah, the odds of you hitting 6 in a row would add up to about 0.5%. But what if I just said you have to hit 1 3-pointer and that counts for everything? And that's basically what Trump has to do.
Bad example because I'm a really good 3-point shooter.
You're a really good 3-point? Really, okay. Yeah. Half-court shot.
Think Reggie Miller.
Hit a major league pitcher slider into the outfield. Whatever it is. A Tim Wakefield knuckleball. The point is, he doesn't need to pull off an upset 6 different times to win Pennsylvania, Arizona, North Carolina, etc. He just needs to surge nationally in the polls about 4%, maybe 6%, depending on which polls you believe. Real Clear Politics average has him down about 4% in Pennsylvania, and I just wrote on this at the Washington Examiner. He's closer than that in other states where he trails slightly, such as, again, North Carolina, Arizona, Iowa. So if he got a 4 to 6% jump in the polls, which is a lot, but it's not undoable, if he does that, he's leading in enough states to win in the Electoral College. So again, if you gave me a 50-50 bet right now, I would bet on Joe Biden. But if you started to give me odds, then I'd move my money over to Trump.
So let me try to drill down on that and get a little more granular. What I think you're saying is that whatever he does, whatever he might do that would win him Arizona against the polling right now, would also be seen in Michigan, Wisconsin, North Carolina. So if he does something that's going to make him win in Arizona, a great line, Biden stumbles, whatever that might be, that's also going to happen in those other states. It's not that we're having an election per year and each year he has to do something amazing. It's that all of it's happening concurrently. So whatever he does that wins that one is probably going to take him across the finish line in the others. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. And it's not totally sure. You could imagine him surging in one state, in Pennsylvania, for instance, where he's making a comeback. Some of it has to do with the fact that people don't believe that Joe Biden is for fracking. And so that's making a little bit of a difference. But the days of sort of local elections and there being tons of local issues, sadly, are kind of behind us. I'm a conservative guy. I wish that more people cared about what was closer at hand than just looking at the big center stage. But the fact is that most people are just looking at the big center stage. So, for instance, if somehow Trump dominates in this final debate, you could imagine him surging a few points, but it wouldn't just be in Pennsylvania. So that 99.5% study that I pointed to was one that assumed Trump had to sort of hit the half-court shot in 8 different arenas. But you have all the states in the same arena, and Trump just has to hit it once.
Let me ask you on kind of a state-by-state. Let's start with Florida. The president seems to be doing better, and this is purely anecdotal, with the Cuban-American community than I've seen a Republican do in quite some time.
The numbers bear that out. You're correct, yes.
You also have a lot of New Yorkers who have moved to Florida and retired who may not exactly be Republicans, but it seems to me they have a lot of similar characteristics to Trump and I would assume would be less bothered by him. Would you follow me on that one?
I'm a New Yorker. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, so a lot
I know people like that. You wait in line at the bus stop. You ride on the bus. You go to the local pub. There's somebody like him. And even if he's not your best friend, you laugh at him. maybe you wouldn't want him, a guy like that, dating your daughter, but you don't mind running into him at the coffee shop in the morning.
Yeah, it's a lot of these are sort of regional quirks. People come to Houston from New York, and they love to tell you they're from New York. And I've always kind of been of the opinion, I'm a lot less impressed with that than you are, fella. But but I think to New Yorkers, there are certain quirks. You know, when Ted Cruz said of Donald Trump when they're running against each other in the 2016 primary, and he said New York values, and people said that was a really dumb move. I felt like, no, it wasn't. I think a lot of Southerners can be put off by New York quirks. But I think a lot of those folks, this sort of New York diaspora who've moved to Florida, it strikes me that there is a unique blend of people perfectly suited to a Trump candidacy, and that maybe that gives him a better shot than usual to, first of all, win the 29 in Florida. Would you agree?
Well, so a couple things. One, I was about to say, as a New Yorker who's been to Texas and been to the South quite a lot, I don't think that I've encountered a lot of hostility, but maybe as a New Yorker, I just don't notice.
No, we're quiet about it. We're seething quietly about you, Carney.
This is what we say. New York, we may not act like we like you, but we do. In the South, they may not like you, but they act like they do.
Right, exactly.
In the Midwest, both. They act like they like you, and they actually do.
Right.
And then in California, they don't like you, and they don't pretend to. So that's my summary of the country. But anyway, back to Florida. It is true that the New York diaspora, as you say, sort of understands Trump a little bit more, and he is just kind of your uncle, your next-door neighbor. He's very close in the polls, and right now, even though he's behind in the Real Clear Politics average and the 538 numbers, I would bet on him winning that, and the Cuban thing is a big thing. But I got a big but for you on Florida. The but is the elderly population. There's evidence that the high numbers of deaths among the elderly in the United States and the increased need for the elderly to not see their grandchildren and that sort of thing because of the worry, the effect that this has on people over 70, especially over 80, high rate of death if you contract this virus. So for while most of the country we're saying this is something we're going to have to live with, a lot of the elderly know they can't. And Florida is by far the oldest state in the country. So that could offset some of his gains there. That said, I agree with you in general. I think in Florida he's going to outperform normal.
That's a bigger butt than Lizzo.
It's a big butt.
Oh, we're talking to Tim Carney. He writes at the Washington Examiner. And we are examining an article that he just wrote about the likelihood that Trump wins and really kind of going against what might be conventional wisdom. And we'll continue that conversation coming up. A quick reminder, you can get your Michael Berry Show merchandise, gear, you name it, at michaelberryshow.com. Click on it. T-shirts, mugs, pins, bumper stickers, all sorts of fun stuff. 10% goes to Camp Hope, our residential treatment center for veterans with PTSD. The other 90% of profits will be donated or given or earned by Chad Nakanishi and Ramon Robles. It's our way of creating kind of a virtual tip jar for those two. So thanks for everything you buy on there. It goes to a great cause. Tim Carney is our guest. He has written a piece related to the fact that the pollsters seem to have written Donald Trump off, and his point is not so fast. Let's go state by state. What in the hell is happening, Tim, in Arizona? Arizona has always been, to me, the most reliably red state. What has changed in that state?
So, to some extent, it is immigration. Although, that said, Trump is doing decently among immigrants. And frankly, immigration as an issue is more the desire for immigration restriction is highest in Arizona, in any state, I think. That you've got a huge demand for somebody to actually build the wall is there. So why is Trump trailing in the polls there? A big part is the suburbanization. And the suburbs, upper middle class suburbs in the United States, have been trending towards the Democrats steadily for 30 years.
To what do you attribute that?
Okay, so a variety of things. One is that you just have more isolation of those suburbs. It used to be that somebody making six figures, husband and wife, both with a college degree, they were more likely to live next door to a blue-collar person. the story of the last 40 years is a story of the wealthy, the college graduates, more and more living in places where they only live next to other people. So what that creates is more of a bubble. And when you have more of a bubble, you're going to be less sensitive to things like, immigration, for instance. Immigrants are the people who mow your lawn, not the people who go to your kid's public school and make it harder for the teachers to teach everybody. For another thing, it has to do with social issues. The parties used to be more divided. There were pro-choice Republicans and pro-life Democrats. That doesn't exist anymore. The upper middle class tends to be socially liberal for everybody else while themselves living socially conservative lives. And those two factors, I think, add up to it. But so different baselines in different places. Where I live, Montgomery County, Maryland, we had a Republican congresswoman up until about 2002. So it went from about 45% Republican down to about 35% Republican. Where I'm from, where I lived, I went to high school right outside of New York, Westchester County, went from about 55% Republican to 45% Republican. But you guys saw it in Texas. Some of those congressional districts that flipped, that was about the suburban districts moving. In 2018, the Democrats nearly gained their majority by winning these suburban districts.
That's an interesting point, and I can look to a district which may be one of the ones you're referring to, the 7th Congressional District right here in Houston. This is a district that George H.W. Bush represented for years in Congress, then Bill Archer, and then John Culberson. And Culberson mm-hmm. kind of got lazy and sloppy and wasn't taking care of the constituent work, wasn't returning to the district the way he should have. And this candidate comes out of nowhere, Lizzie Fletcher, a white liberal woman from the district, and beats him. And it was one of those things that everybody just looked around. We were shocked. How could this happen? But there was a Democrat wave that was straight. It was the last of our straight ticket voting, which we don't have any longer in Texas, thank goodness. But that's a district. Wesley Hunt is the candidate. He was just on Joe Rogan. It's the second most listened to Joe Rogan podcast already. So he's really caught fire. He's a West Point guy. He's a war veteran. He's a conservative black guy married to an emergency room nurse, two beautiful kids, and just a lovable guy. And he may win that seat back. But further to your point, that is a seat that has been Republican for probably 60 years. And at a time when Texas was not Republican. So I think we're seeing that more and more, and that kind of fits in with what you're talking about. These suburban voters that went to college and they're not living the lives that the traditional middle class used to live. They're in their own little island. I've never heard it described the way you just did. But that makes absolute, and I can just think case by case that that's what's going on. What's going to happen in Wisconsin? Obviously, a state we talked a lot about because Hillary didn't campaign there toward the end in 16, and Trump pulls off something of an upset. The Democrats are not going to let that happen again, are they?
No, I think Joe Biden actually visited Wisconsin, unlike Hillary Clinton, but that was a state with the biggest swing from the final polls, if you looked at the Real Clear Politics average. From the final polls to the actual results, it was about 7 points. Trump outperformed them. And a little more than 7 points is Trump's deficit in the polls there right now. This was a state where you had Scott Walker basically win three elections and then kind of handily lose another. You had Democrats hold on and carry a tough Senate seat in the midterms when the map was kind of rigged against them in a lot of other states. They did that, and they picked up the governorship. So it's the swingiest state. Wisconsin is the swingiest state in the last 12 years in American politics. The trend line is towards the Democrats at the moment. I'm not saying it's going to keep going. I think it will swing back. But the fact is that Trump's deficit now in Wisconsin is larger than his deficit was 4 years ago. And he barely won Wisconsin 4 years ago. The other thing counting against Trump there is that the pollsters say, they say that they fixed the mistake they made in the polls last year, which should go back to your last point. They were under-polling people with no college degree 4 years ago, and they knew that but didn't think it mattered. Now they're doing the weighting and the sampling that they think they need to do. But still, in Wisconsin, Trump did 7 points better than the polls.
Yeah.
So if that tightens at all, if Trump is down by 6 in the Wisconsin polls, you can just say, well, that's a toss-up if you judge by last time.
If you're weighting the polls, once you look at these results and you start looking down at crosstabs and really drilling down and getting granular on the data, How much do you think it affects the polls that Trump supporters are far more likely, as I suspect they are, to avoid answering polls or to avoid answering them accurately because they don't trust pollsters?
I think the trust is a key word there. What Donald Trump tapped into in the early primaries was a deep distrust of kind of establishments and elites of all stripes, that people, voters in Washington, it's easy to think, oh, well, these voters vote because they care about gun control or they care about immigration or they care about taxes or judges. But those policy issues are not on the forefront of most swing voters' minds. It has to do more with culture, with personality, and largely with trust. And Trump tapped into the people who said, you can't trust the media, you can't trust the Republicans, you can't trust the Democrats, you can't trust big business. And that was Trump's core constituency, was the people, I call them alienated, that was the title of my book, Alienated America, because these were the people who didn't feel anybody spoke for them, who felt this deep distrust. And when it comes to pollsters, they're thinking, I don't trust that you're really asking about this because you want to tell the truth. I think you're up to something else, no good. And you see, one of the predictors of Trump's success in the early primaries in 2016 was low response rate to the U.S. Census. So then carry that low response rate to the U.S. Census over to low response rate to pollsters. So the burden is on pollsters to say, okay, I know Trump supporters are going to respond at a lower rate. How can I work that into my models? And that's what, I don't envy the pollsters. I don't think that's a very easy thing to figure out.
Quick reminder, if you'll go to michaelberryshow.com, that's our official website, and while you're there, buy your official Michael Berry Show gear and wear it proudly. We appreciate you. That's all at michaelberryshow.com. There is this phenomenon that you referenced of particularly white voters that are not, that did not go to college, but they're not low earners. I mean, many of them do very well. Many of them are self-employed. Very yep. entrepreneurial. I mean, it's our audience. It's probably the single largest demographic of our audience. They're very successful, but they don't have the college value system. They don't have the college, you can call it indoctrination or whatever you want to call it, but they're just a different type of voter. And Trump seems to do extraordinarily well with that voter.
I mean, that's exactly right. Another way to look at it, on the individual level, education actually did predict Trump support in the early primaries. And I always talk about those early primaries in 2016 because it showed who came out of the woodwork for him,
yeah.
who didn't care about politics and showed up for him. Lower levels of education did predict. Income did not, in fact, predict it on an individual level. But on a local level, it did. And you know what else predicted it? Was just sort of general what is the direction of your community? Are things kind of falling apart or are they on the upswing? People in the upswing were not interested in the guy who said, make America great again, because America was getting greater every day. People who, when I asked them, I said, you're wearing that hat and that scarf, what's ungreat about America? They would tell me stories that weren't necessarily about factories or about immigration or anything like that. They would tell me stories about how they used to, when they were kids, go and plant flags and the gravestones on Memorial Day, how they had a giant 4th of July fireworks show in their hometown and everybody would bring something for a potluck. All these stories that seemed, as a reporter, I was like, wait, what does that have to do with the presidential race?
Right.
But I realized that places that seemed collapsing, so it's not the people who were collapsing, the people who were themselves doing really poorly. It was people who looked around and said, My neighborhood, my community is collapsing. Those were the ones who rallied most and earliest to the guy who said, make America great again, because those were the ones who had an idea of an American greatness that they saw disappearing.
It's interesting because I can think of so many cases where I see that. And I also think it's a bubbling up sort of resentment and anger and desire to change it. That there is a sense that Democrats don't love the country, that we don't have open displays of patriotism any longer. And I think that bothers people. And I think Trump's unabashed, aggressive, muscular patriotism means something to people. I enjoy it. I love it. It makes me feel good. And I think other people feel the same. They want to feel good again.
Yeah, I agree that the wanting to feel the patriotism is part of it. Also thinking that, you know, what we had in the past wasn't necessarily bad. Trump was one of the few people who was willing to say that, you know, if your world has changed, that doesn't necessarily mean it's progress. While the New York Times would tell you, if you think things were better 25 years ago, you're just a racist, sexist, homophobe, right? But the patriotism is interesting, too, for me, because my understanding of patriotism, when I've been reporting over the years, has increasingly been that it shows up on a local level. Yes, somebody about patriotism, maybe they'll talk about like Michael Phelps, and surely they'll talk about some war hero, but often it's like their hometown hero. It's that Memorial Day parade. It's the planting of the flags. 4th of July is like a fireworks show in your local neighborhood, right? So this is the amazing thing about America. And an interesting thing when we talk about nationalism and Trump and that sort of thing, we love the country and we express this love of the country, but we do it in a way that's local. And so that would be what I would want to see from somebody who sort of taps into Trump's nationalism in the future whenever Trump's gone, is somebody who can do the patriotism but also say, this is something that's going to be diverse, it's going to be different, it's going to be local.
We started our conversation talking about your piece related to maybe all this poll talk is less accurate. You know, one of the things that is striking is that Joe Biden can't gather five people for a rally, and Trump has a rock star crowd-drawing appeal that I've never seen, including Obama. I've never seen anybody have, and here we are almost 4 years into his presidency, and it doesn't seem to have dissipated. It's as strong as ever. That shows me an issue of enthusiasm. How much do you think that will prove the polls wrong? Because if you ask two people, are you voting for Trump, for Biden? Yes. Are you over here voting for Trump? Yes. But that guy that says he's voting for Trump, he's excited about voting for Trump. Nobody's excited about voting for Biden. How much does that affect the actual, because it doesn't matter how you answer the question when they call you. It matters whether you get off your duff, get off your recliner and go vote.
No, and Trump does better in polls of likely voters than registered voters, which is to say the pollsters have a way of trying to guess if you're likely to vote. I mean, do you actually know when an election day is? Do you know where your polling location is? Did you vote for Trump in 2016? Your answers to all of these questions make them have a formula of how likely you are to vote, and Trump does better in those. The counterargument to what you said is this. Donald Trump is very good at motivating both his supporters and his opponents, which is to say these record numbers of early turnout you see in places like Georgia and voting on the first day you're allowed to vote early in other states. I think there's evidence that a lot of that is people who say, I want to get Trump out of office. And this was a case some Democrats made to me personally. Some of them said, look, we don't need an exciting person to be Trump. We need a boring person because the enthusiasm is not going to come from our nominee. The enthusiasm is going to come from driving out Donald Trump. So I do think Trump has immense enthusiasm, but I think he also enthuses his opponents more than any politician before him.
Yeah, I can see that. I think there's something to that. I just look at that great middle swath of people who are, they're not really undecided. They may or may not be independent. They're certainly less radicalized than those of us on the right or those on the left. They don't live for politics. Maybe they listen to sports radio, or maybe they're kind of disconnected from it all. They may or may not cast a vote. And I don't see that group of people being so motivated to vote. While they might tell a pollster, I'm going to vote for whoever's not Donald Trump. What's his name? Joe Biden. I wonder if that group of people goes out and votes because they're less interested. And I do think there are a lot of those people that,
You don't need that many of them. In Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan 4 years ago, there were probably enough sort of Bernie supporters and then some African-American Democrats who just said, I have no interest in Hillary Clinton and Trump can't win anyway. In those three states, there might have been enough of that population that if they showed up this time around, that would swing the state. It doesn't have to be a million people in a state. It could be just 30,000, and that flips those swing states.
Tim, are you okay on time? Can you hang with us for a little longer?
Yeah.
Tim Carney is our guest from the American Enterprise Institute. We'll talk about this piece he's written coming up. We are talking to Tim Carney of the American Enterprise Institute. He is also the commentary editor at the Washington Examiner, and that's where the piece was published that we are discussing. Election experts say Trump is 99.5% likely to lose. Here's the simple reason they're wrong. Tim, do you think all this talk about polls affects the results? Particularly, do you think that people say, well, if Trump can't win, I'm not going to show up and vote? Or do you think they say, well, looks like Biden's going to win, I don't need to show up and vote?
I do think so. I think that 4 years ago, Trump might not have won Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Michigan if people knew he had a chance of winning. I think there were people who you got to combine it with Hillary Clinton's unprecedented unlikability. People did not like Hillary. They did not want to vote for her. But some of them said, well, she'd be better than Trump. But then imagine that voter who then believes that Trump doesn't have a chance because, again, in Wisconsin, Trump was down by 6.5, I think, in the polls. And so that person is going to say, I'm not going to go out of my way to vote for this woman who I have no interest in voting for just to cast a symbolic vote. So I do think the polls can influence voters' understanding of the importance of it. For instance, in where I vote in Maryland, a lot of times if the Republican is not somebody I like, I just say, look, this person, I don't like them. They're down by 20 points. I'm going to vote for somebody actually pro-life. But then if the race is looking close, my governor, Larry Hogan, he's been in close races both times, or possibly close races both times. So I had no hesitation voting for him. So surely the polls do influence how people vote.
Christmas Eve, my brother and I would beg our mom when we were growing up. We wanted to open our presents early. We couldn't wait till the next day. It was so much buildup, right? Do you think that all of this talk of polls, it's constant from Washington Post, New York Times, and the like. Do you think this is because they can't wait on the result because they're so excited and they live it? Or do you think it's a conscious attempt to, or conscious or not, it's an attempt to skew the election and sort of suppress the Trump enthusiasm?
I don't think it's an attempt to skew the election. I do think that we are there. And in past years, we've gotten almost all the results on election night. And we're sitting there and used to being able to count it. What the media wants this to be exciting. So that means we have to have information that's valuable. And that requires two things. Assuming it's close, and assuming that we actually have real information. This year may or may not be close. I think you're silly if you rule out Trump, but I also think it's possible Biden gets a blowout. But also there's a possibility that on election night we're not actually going to get, on Christmas morning as it is, we're not actually going to get our presents, that a lot of the results are not going to come in because of unprecedented vote by mail. And so Pennsylvania, which very possibly is going to be the swing state, their state court just ruled that their votes don't have to come in until a few days after the election day. So then they start being counted a few days after the election day. So it's going to be tough. We're going to want to cover the election results as they come in, but we're used to a few hours of staying up late and crunching numbers, and this could be a few days trickling in, you know, like the election of 1804 or something like that.
So dispiriting. It's so dispiriting. It leaves people with the sense that things are not fair. And
that's
I find
right.
that erodes every institution, the fabric that binds us, the sense of nationhood. All right, Tim, I know you like to report and not opine, but I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to give you the state, and you tell me not who you want to win, obviously, but who you think will win Pennsylvania.
I think Joe Biden is going to win Pennsylvania, and he's going to win the presidential race by that one state. It's going to be just that margin, and that Pennsylvania is going to be the tipping point state, and I think Biden hangs on and wins by only a few electoral votes.
Arizona?
I think that one goes Trump.
I do, too, and I'm really surprised it's been that close. I'm assuming you got Ohio for Trump, Florida for Trump?
Ohio for Trump, Florida for Trump, yes.
Wisconsin?
Wisconsin for Biden.
Michigan?
Biden.
You think Biden wins big there?
No, I think it'll tighten, but his lead there is significantly bigger than it was before. The Democrats picked up House seats. They won the governorship there in 2018. You've definitely seen a Demward shift in Wisconsin in the last 3 years.
You know, those states.
In Michigan.
Kind of Big Ten football states, which I think represents well the politics. Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. I am fascinated by the way the race is playing out there in the demographics of those states. It's very interesting how those states are going to turn. I go back to the Harris-Wilford race before 92 in 90, which Carville and Begala ran, and then they employed a lot of those tactics to win for Clinton in 92. And they were going after a very similar voter in a similar stage of their life. I think Trump is better at appealing to those voters than George H.W. Bush was. I don't think Biden is as good as Bill Clinton was, but it shapes up in much the same way.
Yep. No. And the ignoring of the working class white vote by the pollsters and by Hillary Clinton was the reason she lost 4 years ago.
It's going to make for a very, very interesting year. Is there an October surprise that you foresee?
No, I think the Hunter Biden stuff was the closest stuff we got on that. Anybody who was going to plant something would have planted it by now. You've already had millions of voters. It's too late to move people right now. And I think, now play this back at me when it happens, but I think we're not going to get an October surprise. Do you remember they did that to George W. Bush? They dropped the drunk driving stuff in the news the Thursday night before. That's too late these days. You can't do it. Too many people vote early and vote by mail.
I'll never forget. I was on the Bush strike force, and we were in Louisiana. Louisiana was now trending sufficiently Republican that Missouri was our big state. So they flew us to Missouri, and we went to a Rams game. We're campaigning at a Rams game in St. Louis, and we come out and we get they said there's been bad news. We go back to the hotel, and there we all were, just devastated, because we thought this is going to cost him the election. And I really don't think that election would have been as close as it was. We wouldn't have been discussing hanging chads had it not been for that DWI that was dropped at the last minute that happened in Kennebunkport 25 years earlier or whatever, 15 years earlier.
Yep. But again, I think that was a different era.
It's a very different era. It's going to be a very interesting race. Tim, thanks for your perspective. Thanks for taking time. Please come back and visit with us.
Anytime. Thank you.
All right, buddy.